I was a little clumsy in the beginning.
Doesn't show.
No, but I've had dancing lessons, which came in helpful, so it was never gauche or so. But in the love scenes, maybe I was sometimes too tender. I don't know, but I was very stubborn and did exactly. I said, this is all I can. I'll do it like this. And then it was okay. Yeah.
Columbia Pictures proudly presents Emmanuel. Emmanuel, X was never like this.
I loved Sylvie Christel. I mean, she was one of those women that you dreamt of. You know, petite and wonderful and Dutch and a bit French.
Emmanuel.
Emmanuel, this is about erotic.
Yeah.
Yes, I was seeing Russia.
Seen her. Did
you enjoy them?
Music, nice.
Soft porn film in the 70s, yeah. Right, yeah.
Ah, man, he's a faulty tower, isn't he?
That's Manuel.
What was her name? Sylvia Christel? And, Marlon Brando?
I've never seen the whole movie. I could never finish it.
Yeah. Oh, because you never got all the way through?
Excuse me?
Did you get turned on by them?
Yeah, because it was like burgeoning sexuality at that time.
Did you watch with your boyfriend?
No, Gang of Girls.
But you're all at screen.
Yeah.
But when I was at school, sort of around that time, the paperbacks used to do the rounds, like, fucking Billy O in school, and pages stuck together, that sort of thing, you know?
Emmanuel is sensual, but she's elegant. She's fantasy, but she's fun. Her extraordinary story allows all of us to look into the face of pure sensuality for perhaps the first time.
The first Emmanuel film was made in 1974. It was based on a pseudonymous book purporting to be the author's real-life experiences as a diplomat's wife in Bangkok. It starred Sylvia Christel and was directed by Juste Jacquin.
First of all, you have to know that Emmanuel book was a very, very famous book at that time. And it was forbidden on the shops. So it was a very classic book under the table.
I read the first Emmanuel book, you know, which was a very successful book in the 60s. Emmanuel Arsan, I think, was the writer of it. And so I could see, yeah, you know, it's sort of the dream life of the tourist of the 60s, you know. A bit of drugs, a bit of sex, all of it in an exotic background, you know, with just amazing women.
Emmanuel was described as a Eurasian woman with long, black, shiny hair and, I don't know, and I myself, being Dutch and 5'9½, or I don't know, felt that I really should abandon whatever was written and take the character from the script and really draw it towards me, my own personality.
I was a very famous photographer. I worked for Vogue at that time, and I started to do a lot of TV story about Dim Dam Dom. It was a nice show about fashion, beauty, and everything. And the producer asked me, why do you want to be involved with a feature film? So I said, why not? I love to. It's a dream. It was a dream for a young director to be involved with a feature film. So he sent me the book. And when I read the book, I said, my goodness, what can I do with this?
My model agency called and asked if I wanted to do an audition for a French erotic film. And I said, yes, absolutely, why not?
Nobody wanted to be involved with the erotic film at that time, because at that time it was more a pornographic film with X in X cinema.
Just could not find a French actress to play the part, because it was a film, well, of course, I don't know, everyone knows, but it was like not obvious at that time that a serious actress would act undressed and do love scenes.
Of course, I was famous for photography, but I didn't show that I can redirect the film. So all the French actresses say no way.
Just decided that it would have to be a foreigner. So he went to England, to Scandinavia, and finally ended up in Amsterdam, where I was one of the girls that could go to Paris, meet with the producers, and do another screen test over there.
I didn't find what I want. But I saw a girl running with... She was an assistant or a secretary. And she was tall, short hair, blonde. She had nothing to do with the Emmanuel actresses I tried to find. But I had something, I said, that's her. And it was Sylvia Kristel.
I was glad that the model agency explained to me that it was about an erotic film, and I thought, well, knowing directors, they'll probably ask you to undress. So I picked a very slinky, beautiful, silky dress with spaghetti straps. And so while he was interviewing me, I was telling a story, I don't know, about my family or whatever. And then dropped the dress in the middle of the speech and just went on talking. And he liked the fact that I was very natural about it and not tense or nervous or conscious of my body.
I came back in Paris with Sylvia Kristel, and everybody told me, but you're crazy. It's nothing to do with Eurasian brunette with long hair. You come with a giraffe, with short hair, and I say, that's her. And I fought for that, and I fight for her, and she did the film.
It's a small world, quite amusing. Retired adventurers, office staff, diplomats.
And have you ever cheated on your husband with a woman? I don't know, does it count with a girl?
I think that a certain vulnerability was there also, because I'm not your typical sex goddess. I'm not well equipped enough, I think. But that, I think, was part of the charm.
So when we did Emmanuel, we fight for to have the right to be in normal theater. And the film was forbidden for 6 months.
I was very pleased to do the film, since I'd never been in Thailand before. And also I had a feeling that this film was unlikely to be released because it wouldn't pass censorship, I think. And the producer really didn't want to bring out this movie in a specialized X-rated theater. He wanted it in a normal theater.
I don't want to say, of course, that it was lucky to Mr. Pompidou die. I think it's awful to say that, but Monsieur Giscard d'Estaing, the next president, says that if he's the president, if the French public give him the presidency, he has no more censorship.
So I figured, I can relax, my mother will never see this film. Little did I know.
So, fortunately for us, 6 months after, the film happening everywhere.
Emmanuel was a huge success. It played in one cinema in Paris for 13 years, where it was seen by almost 4 million people. It was also highly popular abroad. When James Furman joined the British Board of Film Censors, it was the first film that he was sent to see.
When I went along to an evening showing, the cinema was pretty full. And it seemed to be full of young women 18 to 25, lots of office girls who came together. There were lots of women without men. You know, women came in groups, young women, as if they were learning together and could go off and giggle and talk about it afterwards over a drink. And that was something new. There'd never been the idea of sex films for women.
It was on the Japanese tour. Nikko Hotel, the Louvre, go to Vuitton for buy the thing, and go to Emmanuel.
While the film will shock some, Emmanuel is far more elegantly erotic than it is obvious. Emmanuel, she's given millions who've never seen this kind of movie the courage to go.
I think the Emmanuel films made sex respectable in the cinema. Respectable may be going too far. A lot of people never thought it was respectable. But certainly for the general public and for young adults, young men and young women who grew up in the age when you could see films like Emmanuel in the cinema, they began to think, it's really rather nice, why not?
Emmanuel. It's the first film of its kind that lets you feel good without feeling bad.
Emmanuel is not a hardcore movie. It's a softcore movie, and what's important about that is it managed to maximise its audiences by playing in mainstream cinemas. Couples went to see this film. They went to see it not just for sexual tips, but in order to join in dinner party conversations. It was a film that everyone was talking about, and you had to see it to be part of the moment at that time.
Emmanuel certainly had a strong effect on me. I remember my favourite character was Mario, played by Alan Cooney. I thought Mario was hilarious, this brilliantine roué who said things like, "Let me take you to the dernier limite of erotisme," to young girls. And I remember trying this line myself on girls at parties. "Let me take you to the dernier limite of erotisme." But it didn't work.
"I'm really very happy. She's much lovelier than you said."
Emmanuel was supposed to be a pupil of Mario. He is going to introduce her in sophisticated life. Eroticism.
Alain Cunha accepted to do the film because he was sure that the film can never be a success. And it was a nightmare to work with him during the film.
I thought he was a bit old, but also we had no rapport at all. That was tough. But at the other hand, his presence was so there, so much there, that I couldn't do anything else but follow him.
And it was funny because when the film was a very, very big success, he tried to write in the newspapers that the young girl have to test life with the older guy, because you can teach him all sex.
"Forgive me for not being seduced. I'm returning to my miserable bourgeois life. I only find your conversation repulsive. You really bore me with your sex talk, you know. I've had it. So goodbye."
"She's angry."
The producer and distributor, they really were confident, or they want to make sure that if indeed it became a success, then they would have me very cheap for number two and number three also.
"I know which one I've chosen."
"Jean, it's Anna Maria's first time here. You mustn't be impolite. Let her have first choice."
"I like that one. The one with the lovely hands. May I?"
"Well, of course."
"I know Francis Giacobetti because I made pictures with him, fashion pictures. And he asked me if I'd do a small role in his movie, and I did."
Francis Giacobetti is a man who is also very styleful. People complained that it was too stylized, it was too fashionable. With Francis, he said, "This is my first and last film." He hated it from day one. He thought it was absolutely terrible. And what he found most important was the picture, you know, the visual.
"I seen the Emmanuel film when it first came out in the 1970s. And the effect it had on you then is that you never seen anything that had any lesbian overtones or content, unless you count Ingrid Pitt in the vampire movies. But she was very tasteful, Emmanuel. And in them days, you'd had lots of other people like David Bowie and Mark Boland who were coming out with bisexual art and culture, but not many women.
If you're not used to it, I mean, it's hard to make love with a woman. I mean, it's really hard, but you know, you get paid for it, so you do it. You just do it.
Francis Jacobetti was a very good photographer. So, again, we can say that Emmanuel II was a part of Emmanuel Arsan. On the third, François Leterrier is a good director. But the rest, for me, is bullshit.
It's interesting that no sex film was ever successful as Emmanuel was. And I think by the time they got up to Emmanuel 3, 4, 5, 10, I don't know what it's reached now, the Sylvia Crystal film, she left eventually and was replaced by a younger woman. But those films were back in sex cinemas. I don't think any of them ever made it into big mainstream cinemas again. Sweet
Emmanuel. Emmanuel was to become the most famous franchise name in sex films history. Coming next, lesbian sex.
Getting into the fourth one had a very interesting argument. There was, of course, no script to speak of. And the first director explained to me a little bit his point of view on the story, and Alain told me, yes, you know, Emmanuel is going to change bodies.
Sylvia Christel was not by any sense, in any sense old when she came to do Emmanuel 4. Nevertheless, the film deems that she is past it at that point. So it has to solve that problem, not by widening the boundaries of what constitutes sexual desirability, but by changing her. If it's wrong, fix it. If it's wrong, get out your scalpel, get her into the surgery, and turn her into someone else. Clearly, this is a very pernicious solution to the problem. It's also ludicrous.
I thought it was a ludicrous idea, but I couldn't say no because, well, you know, also after three films, you become a kind of family of the producers. And then since our relationship has always been fine, you said, okay, I'll do it for you.
Emmanuel 2, Emmanuel 3, Emmanuel 4, Emmanuel 6, with nothing to do with the base. Nothing to do with was what she won't say. She accepted. Why? Because perhaps she needs money. I don't know. I don't want to judge her.
I needed the money.
I'd like to humiliate you.
To me, the experience was totally incoherent. I have to tell you right away, you know, because I never saw a script.
To beat you.
It was all put together very casually.
To satiate you with my blows.
You know, the directors, you never knew who was going to direct, you know, the next day.
I'd like to whip you as we whip the rump of an animal that we dominate.
The 10 days that I worked, I must have gone through 4 different directors in 10 days, you know. But, you know, there obviously were a lot more.
You must know who your mistress is.
Well, I didn't want to go on anymore with the series. I had signed for 3 films, and okay, I was going to say goodbye in number 4. And how they were going to do the transformation is really not my business. And then they said, yeah, well, it's very simple. You'll have plastic surgery.
As soon as I saw that glorious body, I was moved.
I've shaped the mere clay and I've sculpted a divinity, a goddess.
I'm your psychotherapist. I am Emmanuel.
The genre proliferated rapidly. Soon there was a rival series starring the Indonesian actor Laura Gemser, who'd also played a small role in Emmanuel 2.
It seemed like a long, one long, long movie that didn't end. You know, it was always the same story, the same things happened, and I think it's just one big movie.
It's interesting to see how something is able, you know, to reproduce itself.
When my first Emmanuel came out, there was this big poster with me on it, and I was naked till here. And there was one day out, and he censored it. Censored, you say that? They took it up, and so people are curious to see it because, you know, it was, and it's only 20 years ago, or maybe So nowadays you see everywhere, you see, I mean, even in TV, you see everything, you see, I mean, in those days it was rather, how do you say, scandalous. I didn't really read the script, but they told me you were doing it. I was doing it in Kenya, so I said yes. That's the only idea to go to Kenya. For me, was okay. I didn't care about the script.
I love black skin. It's a question of taste.
I was a journalist, a photographer, and they always sent me out to find some criminals, to get some drug criminals. There was a lot of drugs, right? And then with all this strange situation, I get all in this strange situation that always had to get myself undressed to get something.
Sweet Emmanuel. Do you want to see if my breasts are better than the ones in the painting?
Any excuse is good to get in, get naked. I saw the first Emmanuel because I was curious, But then I felt bad because, you know, I didn't expect the scenes. So, because I refused a lot of scenes. They put a stand-in and I didn't know. So when I saw the movie, I rather felt bad. But there was a scene in the train. I think it was, she was making love with a whole team, a football team. Or I don't know, I don't remember. But I refused that scene. And they used stand-ins. And I don't know what other scenes, because I didn't really... I forgot. Really, I forgot. That's the train.
There was always the obligatory rape scene, when the woman was stripped at knife point or at gun point or just brutality point and gave way and always eventually began to enjoy it and had a glorious orgasm and then threw her arms around her rapist and thanked him for this glorious liberating experience.
There was one scene in Emmanuel 1 where I really had to scream, stop, because there was this raping scene. There was a boxer that has won the match and then I was the prize and then I had to go on all fours. And then where he would lift my dress and take me in front of Mario standing there. I found it kind of humiliating almost. I cannot think of a better word. Particularly when I found an erection between my legs. I said, scream bloody murder. And I said, where is this translated? And let him explain to this man that it is film. It is not for real. So, and Just said, yeah, it won't happen again. I said, well, you can tell me a lot of things, but I'm going to put on two pairs of underwear so that no silly accidents can happen.
Of course, in the film, yes, she was not totally agree. That's... It's difficult for me to remember very well why this scene was wrote 37 years after. It was not my favorite scene anyway.
I thought it reeked of manipulation and exploitation, even.
I quite enjoyed the first two-thirds of the film. I was pretty shaken by the last 20 minutes, particularly because it built towards the gang rape in the opium den.
And that same day, the rape continues in a kind of a cabana with, I believe, three or four, but it felt like I was, that a train was running over me.
I was really morally appalled by the idea that this elderly male guru that's taking her around for her sexual education pays junkies to gang rape her.
Although there were no sexual actions taking place, the aggression was there. And I explained to the director and the producers that, and she said, well, you look like you're suffering. So I said, well, people that get raped suffer. It is not a pleasurable experience, whatever it says so in the book, you know. And okay, well, do it your way. But they would have preferred here a tiny moment of enjoyment there. There, I remember I pulled face. That expressed horror.
What I was worried about was not the fact that it was a strong sex scene, but the fact that the film was applauding it. At the end of the scene, there are no ill effects. The very next scene, they never talk about it. She never asks him, why did you do that to me? The next scene is the two of them drifting in a punt along the river and talking about something else, talking about erotica.
Napoleon and St. Helena passed the time counting his spoons.
Make love to me now, while we could still be strangers.
That would be too easy.
It seems that that people have had two problems with this scene. One, that it's consequenceless, and the other, that it's representing non-consenting sex. Well, the question about it being consequenceless, that in itself wouldn't be an argument for cutting the scene itself. It may be an argument for cutting the rest of the film after the scene.
What worried me seeing Emmanuel with all those young women in the audience was, what message are they getting? Are they getting the message there's no point in resisting?
Every murder that Hollywood represents is consequenceless. So what's our problem with violent acts which are then seen to have no moral consequences? We need to tackle the question of rape in light of that argument. It also has to be said that the whole of the Emmanuel series is based on the ethic that sex should be consequenceless, that you just do it and then you move on.
Part of the reason why we have so many censorial efforts in this country is because so many people confuse fantasy with reality. They think that an image of a rape is a rape. They think that a person who watches an image of a rape becomes a rapist.
It seems to me that it's perfectly reasonable that we should pass perhaps even more explicit scenes of consenting sex. But once it's non-consenting and forcible, and in fact very nasty, then you've got to say it should not be presented erotically.
The BBFC is not entirely consistent on the issue of what kinds of rapes it will allow to be represented on screen. And it has to be said that Emmanuel rests on the whole idea that sex ought to be consequenceless.
Nancy Friday, an American writer who's chronicled in a number of books for, I guess, the last 20 years or so, women's sexual fantasies, has found a recurrent theme that one of the most persistent, pleasurable fantasies for women is what they call rape scenes.
Were there a lot of rape scenes?
I was raped by three women.
In here?
No, not here. It was in Macau. There were three Filipino girls. I was at boarding school, and one of them held my arms behind my back. Another one held my face. She kissed me on the mouth. I wanted to bite her, but I was too afraid.
The way Nancy Friday explains this is given the puritanical heritage in the United States under which young women are still brought up to believe that good girls don't want sex. The only way that they can give themselves permission to enjoy sex is often to imagine that they are taken over. It's beyond their control.
I felt a hand slide under my dress into my pants. I struggled to get away as best I could because I didn't want them to do that.
I have to emphasize that the fantasy couldn't be more opposite from the reality, because in the fantasy, it's the woman who's having it or who's projecting it or receiving it from a screen image that she chooses to see. She is in control, whereas in a real life rape, she is absolutely deprived of control.
We don't always consent to what's good for us. We may want something that's precisely bad for us. There is a space for masochism in our sexual lives, and I think there ought to be a space for it in our cultural lives. That's not to say that the rape scene in Emmanuel is desired by its victim. It absolutely isn't. But in a wider sense, desire and danger often go hand in hand. So why can't we represent and explore dangerous possibilities of sexual expression and experience?
What's interesting about Emmanuel 2, when we saw it again in the 80s, it seemed a much pleasanter and more acceptable film, because it was about women's autonomy.
I think of Emmanuel in number one as a young girl, a young woman who has to learn a lot, and then all of a sudden when you get in with Emmanuel too, now all of a sudden you have a woman of the world who's in charge.
And we actually found ourselves restoring most of the cuts. And the one thing we never did restore, even I think at the end of the 80s on video, was a cartoon scene, because that was hardcore imagery. Even cartoon, it was hardcore penetration shots.
Enjoy very much is are the swimming scenes. Although we had to reshoot in I don't know, it was January or so, in an open swimming pool in outside of Paris, and it was freezing. So those are moments that you think, oh, but that is enjoyable, the physical things.
We live in such a restricted society that if people want to take the clothes off, they've got to go and streak at a cricket match, you know, and we're really suppressed physically. And it's probably one of the reasons why Britain is such a repressed country, but it'll come out with a good sex guide. Sex is the best friend that capitalism's ever had. It sells everything. And people think there's a gigantic bonkum party going on, but their invitation's lost in the post.
Is there a difference between fantasy and reality? Clearly, yes. Is there a difference between high art and low pornography? The general view is yes as well. But a classical sculpture, such as the Three Graces, is art, suitable for viewing by all the public, while Emmanuel IV is not. But is that true? Is there really a difference? Or is Emmanuel IV art for the lower classes, and the Three Graces porno for aristos?
I was a very successful director of straight drama, and you know, there were sex scenes. I actually directed the first nude love scene in a play for Today, but all it was a woman getting up from bed after sex, and you got a back view of her standing up and putting on her dressing gown and walking across the room. That was, but we had to close the studio in order to film it.
Some studies have been done by government officials as well as social scientists in the United States, which have found that the major impact that viewing pornography has on its audience is to give them more information about sex and, you know, different ideas about how they can enjoy different kinds of sexual activities in the privacy of their own home.
I watch these films as an academic, as someone who's researching the history of softcore cinema, which treads a fine line between what's allowable on mainstream screens and what isn't. And Emmanuel's an interesting cutting edge case for that, I think. I also obviously watch them as a feminist and see them as trash, but symptomatic trash, I would say. Trash which tells us something about what people desired at a certain time. If this is a statement about the aspirations of sexuality in the 1970s, then it's culturally important, even if it's deeply problematic.
I'm Emmanuel. Give yourself to me, and let me show you how to really live and love. Emmanuel, The Joys of a Woman, is my all-new, most recent movie, and most important one, because it's your exciting guide to the new sensual freedom. freedom that you can enjoy and have every right to enjoy. Come with me into a world where you will let yourself be completely free. A world where nothing is wrong if it feels good.
I'm reaching the middle part of my life now where your sexuality wanes, and I'm hoping, okay, I can't cook a loaf in my womb anymore, but I can certainly slice the bread in my brain. So I want the creativity to go from that part of my body to this part of my body.
Where would you say was the best place that you've ever had sex?
Went on a tour of an island in Greece, and we were walking with a few people, and we escaped the tour and climbed over a field and had it with the sheep. With the sheep watching, that is. Not sheep shagging.
I think you should have it in the kitchen. I think you should have it outside. I think you should have it with the neighbours and let the neighbours see it.
On a train.
On a train? McDonald's toilet, the disabled toilet. I'm like, bang, bang.
In a car.
Was
in
it?
A car, yeah. That's the best.
On my bike.
On your bike?
On my bike.
Is that your favourite?
Yeah, she seems to like it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the bouncy castle.
On top of cars, in cars, in the lift.
On a bus.
In the bathroom.
In my head.
I remember one. I used to work in this bar in Manchester.
Try to make love in the toilet airplane. It's impossible. I tried it after. It was a nightmare. I didn't it. And when I opened the window, it was 20 grandmothers waiting for to go to pee pee. And they looked at me, and I was so ashamed. So I promise I never won't do it again. But it's impossible, I promise you.
Or is it? Our intrepid reporters journeyed to Medford, Oregon, to interview West Coast businessman Nick X. This is his story.
I was in the upper deck of the of a 747, and on a flying from Amsterdam to San Francisco, I noticed a young woman. She came over and sat down next to me. And then eventually, she said to me, "Have you ever read the book Emmanuel?" And I said, well, I haven't read the book, but I've seen the movie. She said, well, I don't know if it was in the movie, but there was a scene in the book where there's two people meet on an airplane. And I said, yeah, I that was in the movie. And then she said, well, do you remember what happened? And I said, yeah, I believe I do. It's been a while, but I believe I do. And then she said, well, what do you think?
Mommy!
You're tussling around under the blankets when the lights came on. And right at that moment, the head stewardess came over and said to us, stop this immediately. You must stop this right now. Return to your seats.
What are you going to be doing here?
A little bit of this, and a little bit of that.
Oh, please, you must not be doing that. You are giving me naughty thoughts.
I give credit to the Emmanuel movies for this happening, absolutely.
What is the difference between pornography and eroticism? Pornography, you show everything. It's like a clinic image. You see the sex, you see the penetration, you see all those, what I hate. For me, eroticism is something beautiful, it's something from imagination.
Hardcore has to show the cum shot, it has to show male ejaculation to prove that it's real, but it can't show female orgasm in the same way. So what it has to do is show the female face, kind of, you know, expressing ecstasy. And the Emmanuel films do that, although they're not hardcore films, they still can only show the female face, they can't show anything else. And in the sense that, I mean, there might be some way of saying that, you know, what's most interesting about them, or what hits the spot most accurately, really, is the spectacle of pleasure rather than the tits and bums.
These movies appeared with a certain lapse of time, you know, and so it plays in favor of men to be in a series that has a new volume every 3 years, but for women it's kind of trickier, particularly if it's a sexier role, you know. You've got to light their fire, you know.
I got a little bit tired of doing this, and I was trying to do some other kind of movies, but, you know, I had that label on me, and it's very hard to get out of it. So I said, I had it, so I stopped doing it.
We had to go into a Paris studio to add certain scenes because producers and director didn't agree, they didn't know how to end the film. And then finally just decided, well, she's going to be a doll. And that is very nice. Then for the next one, you can take it from there because she is then a woman. I mean, behind or a doll, behind that mask of things, she can go on with lustful things.
I spent a night with Sylvia. These were the days when I was drugging and drinking, and I did spend a night with her. I spent, like, you know, I think something like from 5 in the afternoon to maybe 5 in the morning. And all we did was talk, fully clothed, and she had on a pants suit, as I remember, which for a voyeur is, yeah, limiting, you know. But, yeah, there you are. And I don't remember anything we talked about, but I know that any kind of suggestion at sex was turned into something else. And I don't know how that happened over and over, but it certainly did. And I left there enlightened, but rather disappointed.
I used to really love spaghetti westerns. So much so that I even directed one, starring Dennis Hopper.
Such a lovely town. Oh! AM PM Mini Mart? Be just like America.
Spaghetti westerns were just like the Emmanuel films. They were mostly badly made, repetitive subgenre pieces. The only difference was that spaghetti westerns were about violence, and the Emmanuel movies are about sex. Today, spaghetti westerns are critically acclaimed and endlessly imitated by filmmakers all over the world. Sergio Leone, who described one of the rape scenes in Once Upon a Time in America as an act of love, is generally viewed as one of the cinema's greatest directors. Fantasy violence is now eminently respectable, but fantasy sex, like a large portion of its audience, women, is still viewed as suspiciously second-rate.
A number of studies have been done that suggest that given the often mutual relationship between increasing freedom for women, increasing equality and rights for women tended to occur in the United States starting in the 1970s with the revival of the women's movement, at the very time that we started seeing a liberalization of sexual mores, including liberalization in abortion laws, the so-called free love movement, and also a popularization of softcore pornography, including the Emmanuel films.
Sex is about fantasy, and one of the primary spaces for sexual fantasy to be represented and explored is pornography. Pornography itself is as old as human culture. It will always continue despite attempts to repress it and censor it.
I actually think there's an unheard majority in favor of things like having sex out of doors, pornography, smoking dope, and other harmless entertainments. But we seem to have this weird tendency to, at the very least, scorn, and at worst, ban bodily pleasures. Things like non-procreative sexual activity, or non-addictive drugs. Why is that? What's wrong with sex? What's wrong with pornography? What's wrong with pleasure? Cheers.
The movies were okay, but, you know, seeing the world, being paid, That's fun.
Emmanuel.